we'll slow play it a little bit. First up on our agenda for tonight is our Finance Committee with Vice President Kennedy. I will turn your mic on.
Good evening. Thank you, President Forsman. We're in item number two, Resolution 583, Resolution confirming assessment role for sidewalk repairs at 9 city locations in 2021. Item number two, Resolution 688, Resolution accepting $1,000 in funding from the League of Minnesota Cities for winning the 2022 Sustainable Award. Congratulations.
Okay. Any questions, counselors? Seeing none, then we will move on to Counselor Alstead with the Personnel Committee.
Thanks, President Forsman. Item number four, Resolution 690, Resolution approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of signal technician, including a title change to traffic operations electrician and specifying contract benefits for same. Item number five, Resolution 691, Resolution approving proposed specifications for the new civil service classification of executive administrator, police, and specifying contracts benefits for the same. Number six, Resolution 700, a resolution confirming the reappointment of Mike Schrage and Nancy Schultz to the Natural Resources Commission.
Thank you, Councillor Alstead. Seeing no one in the queue, the next one's under my committee, Resolution 703, stating council intent that parks fund levy and tourism tax proceeds should be utilized as appropriate for youth hockey facilities in the city. I will just note that after working with Director Philip Williams, we will change the word hockey to sports before it is on our agenda for Monday. All right. We don't have anyone. Think, Counselor? Okay, go ahead. Yes, we'd be happy to. We had quite a bit of outreach, as you will all know, from some of our folks in the youth sports arena, particularly with hockey. And so this is a non-binding resolution clarifying that, yes, some of the funding being put forward through the parks levy proposal, as well as potential tourism tax funds, could potentially, but not for sure, be used for some of the things that they're talking about. So it is non-binding.
Mind if I ask park staff how they feel about
this resolution? Sure, go ahead. Absolutely.
Mr. Philby Williams, do you want to comment?
President Forsman, Councillor Timonic, we very much appreciate the resolution, particularly the broadening of the emphasis to encompass all of our community athletic organizations and the infrastructure they use. I think that we welcome President Forsman's highlighting the opportunity to partial reinvestment in community athletic facilities that in the name of sports tourism, following the sports tourism study that was commissioned by and completed by a task force a couple of years ago, that speaks to the possibility to co-invest, to invest in community park facilities, select community park facilities in a manner that not only renews the facilities that residents know and love, but also lifts up and boosts our tourism economy. And so that's that overlap and that synergy is one that we see as well and that we are excited.
Thank you, Councilor.
I have a follow-up
question. Yeah, go ahead.
The word youth is in there, youth sports facilities. You need to have youth facilities in there as opposed to just generalizing it to all of our sports facilities?
That's, Councilor Tamana, a great question. I would not have a preference if you had a strong one on whether that word is in there or not. I think a lot of our associations that we have in town are certainly focused on our youth, but for instance, the pickleball folks out on the west side of town do not serve our youth market. So I would be just fine with either version.
Do we have to do something to take that word out or change the other word?
It would be a friendly amendment that we could work on with our clerk's office or our attorney's office.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Vice President Kennedy.
Thank you, President Forsman. I really like this resolution. I do want to understand a little bit more sort of overlapping of the current levy or the current referendum, the funding source from that, which is the Parks Levy Fund and the Tourism Tax Fund, and understanding that that increases the amount of organizations that would have the availability to have support for both of these funds, and how did we consider that within these mechanisms of expenditures for anyone who may apply? Where is the sort of return, like the gap of that funding? Because we had only a certain number who could apply for parks and only a certain number who could apply for tourism. Now it seems like it's opening up for more on each end. Where do we see that revenue, extra revenue coming from? Or are you saying it's already there from this study? And do we have a plan on that there would be an increase? Because everything's costing more nowadays. So
yeah, I could take that one. And if I don't hit it well enough, feel free to invite Mr. Philby Williams back. But Vice President Kennedy, I think there's two separate things in here. So there was one particular issue called out about the utilities that I believe one particular organization is putting in a tourism tax fund application for. And they're going to be making their case for why that should be considered, whether that is actually warranted and awarded, I think is obviously up to the folks who are going to be on that committee. They're going to be weighing all of the different applications that we get as a city. And then the intent around the levy piece is more around the investment in our facilities, which would not necessarily be related to tourism, because the high bar, as I understand it, from my work with Mr. Philby Williams, is we can really only make the case that it's tourism related in certain parks that can obviously make the have the evidence to show that there is tourism being generated within those parks. Whereas a lot of our neighborhood parks, where you see a lot of these sports happening on more of a community level, would not be able to make that case, and they would probably have to seek funding from the levy or the general fund to make those reinvestments.
I'm interested. I will discern a bit more.
That sounds good.
I can see a little bit of a messiness going on as far as who's going to be making those decisions and how the community, since it's the community funding, maybe might feel a different way, especially if you're an organization who does hockey and you have tournaments where people are coming from out of town. Maybe it's not a big tournament, but you still have people coming from out of town. How do you discern who gets money and who doesn't, and what is that level? I just want to make sure that there's a good process as to why and why not, and that it makes sense to the community, because essentially it's their money as well as the people coming into our community. But
appreciate that.
I like the intent, and I look forward to it maybe generating more funding so we can support our community across the board.
Very good. Thank you, Vice President Kennedy. Councilor Anderson. Are you okay? No, you're okay.
Thank you, President Forsman. If we change the line, if the language is changed with a friendly amendment to just to sports facilities, but yet three of the whereases say specifically youth hockey. So I don't know, are we just getting ourselves into a mumble jumble of like, what really is this? What?
That's a fair point. If you want to have a conversation about that, I'd be happy to, Councillor Anderson. I think the only group that has reached out to at least me is one particular group that has a focus on hockey. But all right. All right, very good. Councillor Randorf is still in Sweden, is my understanding. So, Councillor Owl, would you be willing to read in Planning and Economic Development for us tonight?
Item 8, Resolution 683, Resolution approving a 20-year development agreement between the City of Duluth and the Housing and Redevelopment Authority of Duluth, Minnesota, for the Fairmount Cottage Home Village at a total cost not to exceed $1,150,000. $1,000. Item 9, Resolution 696, resolution authorizing a development agreement between the City of Duluth and Kami Holdings LLC for the development of property south of Palm Street and west of Blackman Avenue. Item 10, Resolution 698, resolution authorizing lease agreement with DAC LLC for the lease of Workforce Center space in Duluth Athletic Club building. Item 11, Resolution 699, resolution authorizing sublease agreements with Deed
Nemojet
and
AEOA.
AEOA for a sublease for space in the Duluth Athletic Building, Club Building for the Joint Workforce Center.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. I never pass up an opportunity to say Nemojet. All right, Councillor Alstead.
Thank you, President Forsman. Just flagging for the record that item number 8, Resolution 683, I will have to abstain from due to the use of ARP funds.
And as it relates to your employment. Correct. All right. Thank you, Councillor Alstead. Councillor Timonic.
Thank you, President Forsman. I have a question about workforce development using some of the space at, where was it?
The Duluth
Athletic Club. Maybe Mr. Philby Williams can answer this for me too, about whether workforce would have to build out that space and at what cost. Yeah, considering that workforce might be, or somebody else might answer that, considering that that might not be a permanent placement.
Forsman, Councillor Timonic, so that is their current space that they're in. It is an extension of their lease with, also with the possibility of two further extensions. And Director Fauché from Workforce Development is here and can speak more thoroughly to that, and she also likes to say Nemojet. So if she'd like to join us, she can speak more specifically to the use of the space.
Let's hear it.
Thank you, Councillor Timonic and President Forsman. This is our existing space across the street from City Hall. It's an extension of our current lease. We actually reduced the amount of space that we're leasing this time around. But just based on pandemic changes to our services, we didn't need as much space. So we've deleted the bottom floor, but we maintain the second and third floor of the space.
Okay, thank you.
And hold up for a second, just in case Councillor Mayo is going to ask you a question here.
Thank you, President Forsman. I had kind of a follow-up question on that as well. I had heard potential of moving into the library, some of the library space. Is that no longer being considered for kind of the near term then?
We actually are in discussing, continuing to discuss that opportunity and this lease, the timeline of this lease, just being 3 years with the option of extensions was specifically negotiated to allow for that on the off chance that it's able to come to fruition. It'll give us kind of a good time frame to make that change.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And seeing no other councillors in the queue, thank you, Director Fauché, for that update. I think we'll move on to Councillor Mayo and Public Works and Utilities.
Thank you, President Forsman. Resolution 652 is amending contract L30475 with Short Elliott Hendrickson Incorporated for the Cross City Trail Phase 3 in the amount of $86,200 for a new total of $116,200. Resolution 685 is authorizing application for and, if offered, acceptance of a grant from the United States Department of Transportation's Bridge Investment Program, BIP, for improvements to the aerial lift bridge. And Resolution 697 is awarding a contract to Veit & Company Incorporated for the 2022 citywide SIP sewer lining project in the amount of $1,519,442.50.
Very good. Thank you, Councillor Mayo. Councillor Timonic.
Thank you. I have a question. Thank you, President Forsman. I have a question about Resolution 652, about the increase in funding for the Cross City Trail. It looks like it's an increase of $86,000 for a total of $116,000. So does that mean the project would have been $30,000 and it's now triple?
Councillor Tamanic, this is for design work for the project. The project itself would be significantly more expensive, and Director Philby Williams, I believe, can speak more specifically to the details of the project if you'd like.
Mr. Philby Williams, do you want to add something? If not, I'm good.
President Forsman, Councillor Tamanic, I believe in this case, this is a case where engineering initially put forward a scope of work that was very limited just for pre-design, not knowing whether we were going to go to full design or at least go to full design with this particular firm. Going from pre-design, a limited scope pre-design, to full design, I believe accounts for most of the expanded cost.
And as a follow-up, if I may, where does that extra $86,000, what pocket does that come out of?
President Forsman, Councilor Tamanic, in this case, it would have been provided by the City of Duluth, half and half tax proceeds put aside by City Council in 2015 for this particular project.
Great, thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Tamanic. That takes us to Councillor Anderson and his one resolution under public safety.
Thank you.
Oh, did you have a question, Councillor Alsted? Sorry. You beat the buzzer.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Councillor Alsted.
Sorry. Thank you, President Forsman. I will also be abstaining from item 13685 due to employment.
Okay. Very good. All right, Councillor Anderson, go ahead.
Thank you, President Forsman. Resolution 612, authorizing an agreement with the Crime and Justice Institute for professional services to perform a racial bias audit for an amount not to exceed $273,465. And councilors, I know that we are going to have a committee of the whole on this on Monday to have more information. But in the meanwhile, too, I'm just curious, Mr. Shuckman, if you could share a little bit with us about the process that went into getting this racial bias audit, sort of the team of people together.
Thank you, President Forsman, Councilor Anderson. I appreciate that. And Interim Chief Marquardt had a conflict come up this afternoon and was intending to be here. She will be here Monday to speak to this as part of the Committee of the Whole. This is about an 18-month process that included extensive community feedback on what the contents of the RFP would be and what the scope of the RFP would be. That included the Disabilities Commission, the NQT2SLGBIA Commission, the Indigenous Commission, the African Heritage Commission, the Civilian Review Board, the Duluth Community Safety Initiative, the NAACP, and the Interfaith Community Committee for Migrant Justice all contributed in various forms to the crafting of the RFP, at which point then an RFP was put out, and then respondents were evaluated, and then this is the recommended organization that we're recommending to award the contract to do the racial bias audit. That is about the sum total of my specific knowledge of the process, and that is part of why we're having the Committee of the Whole on Monday, is to make sure that if there are additional questions of more detail, that Interim Chief Marquardt, who was the one who did all of that work with community members leading up to this, she will be here and able to speak to that as I believe, along with a number of the community members involved. If there is interest from counselors in talking with Interim Chief Marquardt between now and Monday, that's something she's available for and open to, and we're happy to facilitate that. You're welcome to either reach out to her directly or let me know, and I will ask her to reach out to you.
Quick follow-up. It was Deputy Chief Marquardt then who was involved in the whole process, right? It happened long before her becoming Interim Chief.
President Forsman, Councillor Anderson, thank you. That is correct. And she has been the responsible party in the police department for this work, as well as similar work that the police department is doing. So she will be very able to speak to it very thoroughly.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Councillor Anderson. We now have Councillor Tomanek with Recreation, Libraries, and Authorities.
President Forsman, Resolution 686, amending Resolution 22-0471 for Alliance to provide architectural design services for Spirit Mountain Upper Chalet to increase the amount by $3,000 to include third-party consultant services for a new total of $160,690. Resolution 687, a resolution authorizing a contract with Rachel Contracting, Inc. for Lincoln Park site improvements for an amount not to exceed $2,695,841. Resolution 689, a resolution authorizing city officials to execute a memorandum of understanding and accepting a $7,500 grant from the Northland Foundation. And if I might,
go ahead, Councilor.
I'd like to speak to Resolution 687. This is a long-awaited improvement that was started long before I was on the council to Lincoln Park, which will be, when it's completed, a jewel of our city. It will change the street configuration. It will help to fix the pavilion. It will provide a safe and beautiful playground for children. It will be family friendly. And as I've heard many times about this particular area, when we increase the desirable activity in an area, then undesirable activity has a way of falling off. So we're excited about that. And I'd like to invite Mr. Philby Williams. Do you want to speak to this? Thank you.
President Forsman, Councillor Tomanek, this is a momentous project that will substantially restore what we agree is a crown jewel of our park system that also serves a critically important neighborhood where 50%, in excess of 50% of the neighboring children are living in poverty. Ticks every box. Significant gains in sustainability, historic preservation, equity, access. And it is happily the work of a large and diverse group of partners. 10 local businesses and foundations made major financial contributions. Neighborhood leaders and residents participated intensively in formulation of the plan and advocacy for federal funding. Project staff did an amazing job navigating an unusually burdensome federal regulatory process. And our entire congressional delegation was directly involved in making sure that we were able to bring this project across the finish line. Pending your approval of the construction contract, we wish to warmly welcome warmly invite you to join us at 3 p.m. on August 26th for a community's groundbreaking celebration. And I will make sure to send you more detailed information on that event.
Thank you, Director Philby Williams. And Councillor Alstead has a question.
I don't have a question. Okay. I just want to thank you for your work on this. This is a really exciting project because it's already been voted on and the money is that way. Is heading that way anyway. I can say with confidence that I'm very excited that this project is going to get pushed through. And I know that the community as a whole really needs this. And the improvements that it will make will not only help our kids and everybody in that neighborhood. You know, something that I was very adamant about coming into this was addressing transportation and the fact that in the Lincoln Park neighborhood, over 60% of folks who are of driving age don't have a car. And we need to make sure that we have adequate accessible roads and parks and everything that goes with it. And your work is a direct correlation to all of that. And I just thank you for that.
All right. Thank you. And you're not done yet, Councillor Tomanek.
If I could just ask that this be pulled from consent agenda so we can stress the importance of it with a separate vote on Monday.
I think it would be great to have comments on Monday. Thank you. Councillor Mayo.
Thank you, President Forsman, and thank you for all of your work on this. Mr. Philby Williams, I just had a question about Rachel Contracting Incorporated. I haven't heard of them before, so I don't know, has the city worked with them before, and are they local? Can you give a little more context on their bid specifically?
President Forsman, Councillor Mayo, we have worked with them on large recent projects, specifically some of the work to resiliently restore our downtown waterfront. I believe, but we'll need to confirm via email after the meeting, that they are based in Two Harbors. Our team has a lot of confidence in them.
Thank you.
All right, very good. Looks like you're off the hook, Director Philby Williams. All right, we are through resolutions. On to ordinances to be read for the first time, and I see Councilor Randor's name again. So, Councilor Owl, would you be willing to pinch hit for us? That. Oh, sorry. Let me turn your mic on. There you go.
Item 19, ordinance 29, an ordinance amending the residential planned RP regulating plan for Harbor View and Central Hillside Traditional Neighborhood Development Code affecting three lots on the west side of Central Entrance, south of East 13th Street, to replace the currently allowed building types, lot configuration, and design standards. Item 20, Ordinance 30, an ordinance amending Section 50-20-5.E, 50-25.1, 50-27.3, and 50-30.1b, related to building and lighting landscape design standards. Item 21, Ordinance 31, an ordinance amending Section 50-37.1.0.5 of the Duluth City Code 1959 as amended, clarifying the time requirements for certain appeals of Planning Commission and City Council decisions under Chapter 50 of the Code.
Very nice. Thank you, Councillor Owl. Don't see anybody with their hands up. You have something, Councillor Anderson? Go ahead.
Thank you. So I'm just seeing this ordinance for the first time. Just Ordinance 31. Is there a change that is being sought here? It says clarification of the appealing process, but I'm just curious about what's necessitating this.
President Forsman, Councillor Anderson, I would actually defer to either Attorney St. George or Director Fleege on this. I know that there was work done by both the Attorney's Office and Planning on this.
President Forsman, Councillor Anderson, and rereading it real quick here. It's mostly a clarification. It is entirely a clarification as far as how people can file appeals and what that looks like. The rule itself isn't changing. It's just making clear what it is.
All right. Thank you.
Very good. All right. Well, ordinances to be read for the second time. Councillor Owl, if you could read in for Councillor Randorf.
Thank you, President Forsman. Item 22, Ordinance 27, an ordinance amending Sections 50-19.8, 50-20.1, and 50-41.9, related to UDC updates for interim outdoor living sites, establishing standards for the use, and a one-year limit for such temporary outdoor living sites located on privately owned property.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. And I'll just note that Mr. Kilgore is in the back there if anybody had questions. Councillor Anderson.
Thank you. Again, here, just the language of the one-year limit on such temporary outdoor living sites. So does this mean that if a site is opened up on the East Hillside somewhere, that it's going to be there for 1 year and then it's going to shut down and close? Or does it mean that will an extension happen at that point?
President Forsman, Councillor Anderson, as I understand it, it would mean a reapplication so that it is not something that's done in perpetuity. Excuse me. I don't feel I do not feel that strongly about this, so apologies. Director Fleet, anything else you want to add? Okay.
Okay. Mr. Director Fleet, you have to come up and speak to the microphone. So you're on the record. Thank you.
President Forsman, Councillor Anderson, yes, that is correct, that the intent was to really make it a temporary permit that would need to be reviewed annually as it goes, but they would reapply. And again, it really creates that framework around sanitation and just some oversight and some requirements for sharps and, you know, that it is a supervised site and maintained. And again, it is private property. And you would need a sponsoring agent to apply for those for this application or you know to support one of these sites. So,
excellent. Thank you,
Councillor Anderson, Vice President Kennedy.
Mr. Fleach, if you could just stay there for a minute. Zoning and regulation and planning. People are just passionate about spaces, and I want to be sure we're getting this right as far as any affected communities in the area of one of these. What are the safeguards to ensure sort of like vacation rentals that there's sort of regulations that need to be followed? And then what is the recourse for our city or police in general as far as being able to follow the standards so that we're not running into issues of businesses or a nonprofit maybe in an area of a business and they're fighting because they've created this place for people to live.
President Kennedy, as you'll read through this, there's some obvious requirements around screening. I think the biggest requirement is really for it to be staffed and maintained. So there needs to be staff there that is, you know, managing the site. So it's intended to create enough controls around there. And again, we can, revoke these if somebody isn't following through, but we'd have to go through our normal process to do that. So, well, that's why, one, we wanted the time limit on it. And, you know, we don't have any applicants for this yet, obviously, but, you know, we wanted to create the framework to allow this to happen.
Follow up. Do we have, so in certain areas of town, you know, we allow TIF, we allow unrestricted vacation dwellings. Is there a mechanism where we're going to keep an eye on how many are in certain neighborhoods and things like that?
President Forsman, Vice President Kennedy, I think the challenge with this, and actually I talked to staff because obviously we're going through the CDBG applications, and I specifically asked, are there organizations that are proposing to support this? And really one of the challenges that all of these organizations are facing is staffing. How do they really provide staff to do this? So I think I don't think we're going to see a run on these. I mean, I think the challenge is, can we find a sponsor that's willing to try this, you know, almost in a pilot fashion. So I think, we've had organizations and maybe that would be something that Mr. Kilbore could speak to. I mean, I think there is interest in this, and really what we wanted to create is the ability for this to tried and basically to create some protections for both the residents and then also for the community. So it is trying to find that balance. So we don't have a site in mind, but we want to be able to work with potential agencies that may want to go down this path, whether it's faith-based communities or some other mechanism. But funding is an issue, and really it's not even funding completely. It's more around finding staff. These organizations are all struggling to find staff, as all of our businesses are seeing. I don't know if that really answers your specific question. I think all those things could be considered as we're issuing this. I think the idea is first pass at trying to put a structure together that allows this to maybe play out in a controlled type of environment.
If I may, one more question. Is there a mechanism in there that will state that this is solely operated, paid for, designed by an outside organization and will not affect any funding on our city levy or ask property taxpayers to maybe pay for this? I see it's more of a philanthropy or
I think that nonprofit. Was the intention. That's really why we wanted it on private property and not public property. So we tried to really make that a clear point. I think there's elements in here, you know, no children shall be there. It really requires the operations. There's quiet hours. So there's a number of controls that you'll see through this that allow for it to be constrained as best. The garbage pickup, it is an interim permit that has to be renewed. I think, you know, there's no foolproof thing with anything, but I think we've just recognized that this is a potential solution that might be useful if we can allow it in the community. So I think that, and other communities have followed this. So it is based on some regulations that other communities have put in place.
Is Mr. Kilgore here?
He's in the back. Come on.
I'd be interested in a model that you've maybe read about or.
Here, why don't you come up, Joel?
And I know there's a conversation about a project. I forget the name of it. Not Housing First, but another project. Is that part of that?
Yeah, but stepping on up?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Kilgore, if you want to go ahead.
Yes, yeah. All right. Well, President Forsman, Vice President Kennedy, this was written with Stepping On Up in mind. Stepping On Up represents all of the housing and homeless service providers in the Duluth area. I can't guarantee anything, but I imagine that our agencies are likely the only agencies that would be applying for a permit. This is the first phase of a five-year plan to try to get people off of the street, out of chronic homelessness, into permanent housing. Obviously, we can't build our way out of it immediately. So this offers a temporary solution. Back to your first two questions, as far as the agencies are concerned, we have an intention of reaching out to neighborhoods, doing community meetings and door knocking before we open any site. Inviting neighbors to be part of the solution rather than hopefully seeing this as something that's imposed on them, a place where they, something that they can welcome. And we'll have an ongoing good neighbor committee associated with each site, which will include residents of the site, existing neighbors, and service providers. So if any issues do come up, that committee can meet and try to do problem solving. We also haven't worked out all the details for this, but intend to have a hotline available. And as far as spreading it out through the city, I mean, we ideally would like these sites not immediately downtown, but we're at the mercy somewhat of donors of land. So ideally they would be in locations that aren't in extremely dense neighborhoods and aren't close to one another. We're looking at capacity controlled sites, so likely no more than a dozen people per site.
Extra information.
All right, very good. So since you're here, if you have a question for Mr. Kilgore, try that first. If we can try to, otherwise we're just going to keep tag team, and that's fine too. But Councillor Alstead, you were up next.
President Forsman, and hi Joel, good to see you. I just wanted a point of clarification. So it's the sponsors that have to reapply, it's not the property owners, or it's both. When the year lease is up.
That'd probably be a question for Director Fleasier. Mr. Sheckman, you had your hand up too. I apologize.
President Forsman, Councillor Alstead, that is a great question that I'm not sure that I have the answer to either. I know from the city standpoint, at a minimum, we would have the sponsor involved in that application because from our perspective, and so much of the questions Vice President Kennedy had, you know, our interest is in making sure that we are working to make sure that the individual sites are well managed. And we can't do that obviously, as a city, and so we it will be important to us to make sure that the sponsor is involved in that application. So my best guess, and in kind of out of the corner of my eye, to see if we've resolved this question, we can get back to you on the answer for it. But at a minimum, the sponsor would be involved, but very likely both names. You know, we would know the name of the owner of the property. That part is easy. Sponsor would be a minimum minimum expectation that we would know who that.
And just a quick clarifying question, Mr. Shekman, I think when you say the word sponsor, you're correlating that with the word operator that's being used in the resolution. Just want to make sure we were using that. Okay, very good. Go ahead, Counselor.
So, when you will, so you're planning these sites, you have an idea of some, or you're still, you like you said, kind of at the mercy of property owners. When this says privately owned, I keep thinking in my head, I initially started thinking, like, are people going to do this in their backyards? Is that possible? Is that part of, like, is that being a conversation at all with other sponsorship groups? Just.
President Forsman, Councillor Alstead, I am going to see if Director Fleach can be. Can answer that more specifically. There is, I'm sure, minimum space requirements as well as conditions. I look in the language. There is some specificity around the type of site and what is available on it. And so I think the challenge in part is that, and Mr. Kilgore can speak to this, is that there is not an abundance of readily available opportunities for this, which is something that I would defer to Mr. Kilgore on. But what we're trying to make sure we have in place is a regulatory framework, which is not a fun way to talk about site that is intended to help unsheltered folks. But for the purposes of city discussion, it's a regulatory framework that we can use to make sure that expectations are clear with operators, sponsors, with property owners, and then with the community about what, if this is going to be allowed in the city, under what conditions, and what the expectations are. And, you know, this work has been done in partnership with the Stepping On Up coalition to make sure that we're all generally on the same page about how this will go. And so thank you to Mr. Kilgore and the other partners for that. But our goal is to make sure that we're also paying attention to the neighborhood and the community that these are located in, that we're being mindful of that, and that as operators and residents are working through this, that they are being mindful of that as well, and of the expectations of the community.
From a provider perspective, I think that the sweet spot we're looking at is 10 to 12 individuals on each site. We don't want it too big to create nuisance problems, but we also have a problem with staffing and paying for all the infrastructure. So I don't imagine we'd be seeing any sites that are smaller than that, which probably means no backyards, but it could mean church property, for instance.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Councillor Alstead. Councillor Tomanek.
Thank you, President Forsman. I just would like to direct a possible answer to Vice President Kennedy, and that is that we voted to allocate $150,000 from the general fund to this process, I believe. But when you said that the city would not be involved, I just want to clarify that.
President Monick, I believe it was on this Monday's council agenda, trying to track the meetings here, but and that is funding for infrastructure that is going into the site. So this specific site that is being proposed would be, I'll defer to Mr. Kilgore to speak to what it would pay for. But, you know, one of the things that we've paid a great deal of attention to and had a number of conversations with Mr. Kilgore and the partners about is what role the city should and should not play. And so what we've worked hard to do is to provide technical support in the form of the ordinance change that is coming for you, funding for specific infrastructure items that was on the last agenda, to make sure that the city is playing a role, a supportive role that is also the one that we are best equipped to handle. And so, Mr. Kilgore, I don't know if you're able to speak to the infrastructure portion of that question, but I certainly wouldn't do it as well as you. So,
I'll try my best. I hope I don't get it wrong because we're looking at different pots of money. But my understanding is these funds, well, would be for two purposes. One is for the Warming Center, which is going to be open, extending its season starting October 15th this year. Our outdoor sites are obviously not adequate for winter in Duluth. They're not safe. We won't be maintaining them after the Warming Center opens, so that those additional resources allow us to open a few weeks earlier and fully staff the Warming Center. Additionally, it'll provide for the garbage, porta potties, sharp containers, those kinds of infrastructure that we're really problem solving around right now. The problem is already out there in our communities. Garbage is being left, sharps are being left. The city, in many cases, is expending quite a few resources to clean those up. So we're looking at recognizing the situation we're in right now, how long it's going to take to build ourselves out of this. Let's try to manage that. And so the city's contribution will help us mitigate the potential negative public health and safety consequences of people living outside.
President Forsman, that wasn't really my question. Can I ask another one? I mean, that wasn't my original intent. It took longer than I thought. I'm sorry, but we needed to hear that. That's what I meant to say. Mr. Kilgore, can you tell me, is there a plan or a projection for how many sites are thought to be needed and or possible?
Well, our plan right now is to identify four sites. We wouldn't have predicted, though, 15 years ago, what the economic situation that we're facing right now is, how many people are out in the street. So I think, you know, this plan is going to evolve as economics evolve, and hopefully we're able to make a real dent and get people off the street, and we aren't going to see an increase in people. But anyhow, that's our plan at this point. It's four sites. If they're wildly successful and we see more people needing a space to go, then we'll look at additional sites. One of the sites will be for people sleeping in their cars.
And will each site need to be permitted separately? And you talked about canvassing or door knocking the neighborhood. What if you find significant resistance? What if it's one neighbor? What's the plan for that?
I think the plan is to win them over.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking about private property, and this is an identified community need, and we're taking all the steps that we can to make sure that it's safe. We also want the residents of these outdoor villages to feel safe and welcomed. So, I mean, I guess we'll have to play that by ear. But my experience in talking to members of the community who are concerned about this is that once they hear the details, about how much oversight is there, about how we're really not creating a new situation. We're addressing and mitigating a condition that's already there. They tend to be supportive. So we remain hopeful.
Great answer. Thank you. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Councillor Timonic. Councillor Mayo.
Thank you, President Forsman. And thank you, Mr. Kilgore, for being here and presenting. We had chatted a little bit about this earlier this week, and I'm wondering for the rest of the councilors if you could expand just a little on the kind of staffing plan and then some of the on-site leadership from some of the residents that's also going to be taking place.
Our goal is to create really resource-rich environments without overwhelming our guests. I mean, many people who are living on the street are doing so for a reason, because of perhaps mental health issues that prevent them from living in a crowded shelter. But we want to have, we're going to have outreach workers who are also site managers who are going to be meeting with residents of the villages on a weekly basis and visiting on a daily basis. We're going to be bringing mental health, substance use recovery supports to the sites. As well as providing acute care. Several clinics in town have already agreed to be present. So that's what we're doing with the professional staff. The best practices that we've looked at in other communities talk about the importance of peer leadership among residents of the villages themselves. And so we intend to be identifying individuals at the sites who will take facilitation roles, fire tending roles, garbage roles, and build leadership from the folks there. And then they'll have contact information with the outreach workers. If there are any problems, they'll be our first point of contact.
Thank you. And I think it's just important. I thought it was really impressive to talk about that kind of building leadership within the community there and having folks that are kind of go-to, 24/7 essentially. And then just a question, and this might be for city staff more. Curious about, we had the expense, obviously, for some of the more structural costs of this, but with the trash and kind of some of those other facilities that we're going to be bringing to these sites, do we anticipate that those costs might even out in the long run, simply because we're providing receptacles in areas where we're not going to have to go out and commit staff to finding these areas and cleaning up remote sites? It'll be accessible in a way that it hasn't been before.
President Forsman, Councilor Mayo, from a strictly budgetary standpoint, that would be ideal. But I think it remains to be seen. And, we'll know more once the first one is up and running what the impact is. And I don't know the answer until we try.
And obviously that would be ideal. And I just, I think sometimes centralizing that actually makes it easier for our staff as well. So that's exciting. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Vice President Kennedy.
Thank you, President Forsman. I have a couple other questions. It sounds like I've got a little more idea of what a model or a best practice is, and thank you for that. And then as well as some of the structural costs, thank you, Councilor Tominick, for reminding me of that as well. So it sounds like there's seed money to get this started. What is your plan for sustainability? And I also did recognize and also hear working in nonprofit, I'm trying to work myself way out of a job. I don't want to be doing this work forever, right? And that's that only works if our community is really looking at some of the social impact issues that we have to deal with. But really, I want to be cognizant of not putting this, we have some extra funding that's going to it now, per se. But I do not want this to become something that we have to go and ask our taxpayers to pay for. I believe we need to give people services to support themselves. And I think our organizations, there's enough nonprofits here that, and I'm going to go here, that are paying taxes, that aren't paying taxes, that have a more community well-being or focus, that they maybe need to put more money into this. But my question is to you, where do you see yourself and hoping that this model doesn't become something bigger, right, where we see people coming to live here because we have this great system. Where do you see yourself? How many years is it going to take to work yourself out of this job and out of this strategy?
Years left on this job. But our hope is that the outdoor living sites are a temporary strategy, no more than a few years. Like I said, we're going to have to respond to conditions on the street as they present themselves. But under our current plan, within 2 or 3 years, we're going to have additional shelter capacity to absorb folks who are already outside, get them inside, which of course is ideal, with more privacy, a locked door, an ability to store their belongings safely in a way that they can't even do in these outdoor sites. So that's our goal. We don't want people outside any longer than we have to.
And if I could just ask one more question, and it's sort of maybe a social question of, like, where do we get to the point where we just want to live outside? We live in the north. It's beautiful. When do we get to that point and just allow people to do that? That's where we came from. There were no buildings before, I'm just saying. A little levity, but.
Good philosophical question.
I don't know if that's for you to answer. I'll just leave that there. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Kennedy. Councilor Owl.
Thank you, President Forsman. A lot of my colleagues have asked the questions that I wanted to ask, but I guess one thing, I have two questions. One is more about the sponsor or the individual applying. Is there a fee, and this might be for someone, is there a fee for the application? I recognizing that a lot of these individual who would nonprofits applying have tight budgets and they're taking on this responsibility. I'm just curious if there is a fee with that application process. How long does that application process take? Where are they taking up a lot of their staff time and budget to continuously apply every year?
Attorney St. George, everybody's looking at you.
President Forsman, Councillor Owl. I mean, it's an interim use permit, so I look to Director Fleege, but I believe there are some standard fees for applying for interim use permits.
Yeah, President Forsman and Councillor Owl, yes. I mean, it'd be an interim use permit, but as has been shared here, I mean, we're interested in moving this along. So, I mean, we're obligated to cover our staff costs, but we will try to make it as streamlined as possible. And obviously working with partners, you know, we've helped craft this so it would fit. And I do think the $150,000, was that not ARPA dollars mm-hmm. that were, yeah. So you're right. It is one-time seed money, but the reality is, and I think, CIO Shuckman mentioned basically, we've got those costs as we clean up sites. When fire goes in and they clean all the sharps or the parks, well, I see Philby will, Director Williams is gone already, but he could certainly speak to the amount of cost that comes with those cleanups of those sites when people are, because they are out living out there. So I just wanted to share that there is a real cost that city the city bears now, but we don't know if it'll be a break even. It'll certainly be more controlled and should be safer for both the people that are cleaning up and for the people that are living there. But as to your question around, yes, I'm sure that there will be a fee. I think we will work with to try to minimize it and move things through as quickly as possible, because we do see it as an improvement. I mean, nobody wants to have people living outdoors, and I was really struck. I was, I've been in a couple of meetings, and when one of our colleagues shared that, we shouldn't be calling this camping, because this is not camping. This is not like what we do, when we go out to the woods to camp for fun. These people are forced to do this. They have no other options. So it is really trying to make the best and make the transition to permanent supportive housing, which is really the goal. So, yeah.
And so, yes, yeah. Thank you. That answered that. Follow-up question is focusing on the individual who's experiencing homelessness, who's out on the streets. How will you determine who gets access, given that, if we have four spots, ideally, and 10 to 12, what determines who gets in residence in one of those sites? Is there a wait list? How is that managed? Will people be rejected? I'm just trying to imagine, or if an individual comes forward and one site is too full, what's the next steps for that individual?
Some of these details we're still working out,
okay,
obviously. our intention right now is that individuals would be identified by street outreach workers. People living at the sites would have a vote on who's allowed in to stay with them. There are all kinds of complicated relationships on the street, like there are in all of our lives. So we want to make sure that the sites are safe for everyone. I think if we end up seeing a huge wait list of people who would benefit from these sites, then that's when we have to look at opening new ones.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. Only one question from me, Mr. Kilgore. I appreciate all the information you've shared with me over the last couple of months as this has come forward. I think as we think about going forward with something like this, which other cities are trying as well, as they are facing the same issue, it's about trade-offs. And so one of the things that
we would all like to see less of are folks who feel that they have to live outside in places where it's either an issue with the neighbors or maybe not safe for them. And we've all gotten pictures on this council of various places that would fit that bill from people that are concerned about that presence. And would you anticipate, Mr. Kilgore, that by going forward with something like this, we might see less of that activity throughout the city and more of this centralized spot that people would feel comfortable being outside, even though that's not an ideal situation?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't want to overstate what we can accomplish, because there are always going to be people in our community who are really struggling and in a bad place and probably won't even fit into what we're proposing here. That's been our reality forever. However, we have done several focus groups with people with currently living outside, one with 40 people at the Warming Center, one with about 50 people at Damiano. People were universally excited about this idea. They spoke also about their feeling of not being able to maintain their property, about not feeling safe in neighborhoods, about losing contact with providers. And so losing out on an opportunity for housing or missing their medication. And that's when they go off and, you know, start creating problems for the people that they're living near. So, and we know statistically, folks who have a place to a stable place to live every night and store their belongings are much more likely to access substance use recovery services and mental health services to be able to follow through with appointments and take the next steps that they need in their lives. So I'm, you know, this is experimental for all of us. A lot of other communities have tried it out, and we're learning the best we can from them. And it'll be a new test of our nonprofits and our city and county partners. But I'm hopeful that this is going to make a difference in individual lives and certainly mitigate some of the problems that we're seeing in neighborhoods and parks currently with people who have nowhere to go. I will say we don't have really accurate numbers of people living outside, but it's in the hundreds. And our existing emergency shelter infrastructure is not adequate. And so we need to do something. So I'm grateful for the partnership with the city and the county to move some of these new approaches forward and get our friends and neighbors off the street.
Very good. And thank you, Mr. Kilgore, for being here tonight to help answer questions. And I don't have any more for you, so I think you're off the hook. All right. And that takes us to our last ordinance on the agenda tonight. If Councillor Tamanic, you could read an ordinance 28.
Ordinance 28, an ordinance amending section 9-2 and section 9-3 of the Duluth City Code to clarify definitions and prohibit riding bicycles, electric assist bicycles, wheeled recreational devices, and motorized foot scooters on portions of the Lake Walk and Bay Walk at more than 10 miles an hour.
All right. Councillor Tamanic, I don't have anybody with their hand up. So any other item for tonight, councillors? Seeing nothing, Vice President Kennedy.
President Forsman, if we can pull under your...
Sure. Resolution 703, please pull that.
I'm Mr. sure I'll Johnson. Have more questions in
Sounds good. Some more discussion. Sure. Sounds good. All right. Seeing nothing else, I'll see you Monday. That did not beat the buzzer, but I'm going to let you have it anyway, Councillor Owl.
I think it's all good. Okay. It was just more of a comment, so it's good.
All right. Very good. All right. We'll see you all Monday.
I know. Well, my comment was more... I think I can individually address this with administration. We've been using.